Desire to destroy. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Lord is the vanquisher of the distresses of one who is surrendered unto Him. Thus he who desired to destroy his family told me previously to go to Badari Kashrama. Please repeat after me. The Lord is the vanquisher,
of the distresses of one who is surrendered unto Him.
Thus, he who desired to destroy his family
told me previously to go to Badarikashrama.
Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. While at Dwarka, Uddhava was warned to avoid the distresses which were to follow the disappearance of the Lord and the destruction of the Jodhu dynasty. He was advised to proceed to Badrikashram because there he could associate with the devotees of Naranarayan, and in the association of devotees, devotional service, he could increase his eagerness for chanting, hearing, knowledge, and detachment. So Uddhav was very dear to Krishna. He was actually Krishna's minister when Krishna was a king. He was a cousin of Krishna. And he was a confidant of Krishna also. Often Krishna would reveal to him about his heart, and Krishna was also a very, very learned man. He was a disciple of Brihaspati, and actually Uddhava had a little pride that he was very wise and he was a great devotee of Krishna. So Krishna wanted to teach him a lesson once, and Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. Krishna told Uddhava that, see, these girls in Vrindavan, these gopis, they are very much lamenting due to my separation. So you go and try to pacify them. Till then, Uddhava was not very, but a little proud, and Krishna actually wanted to destroy his pride. And Uddhava thought that he would go and give these village girls some good advice on Jnana Yoga and explain to them how Krishna is all-pervading, omnipotent, omnipresent. So Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they should not lament like that. They can always feel the presence of Krishna everywhere, in everything. And on top of everything, Krishna is actually sitting in their hearts. So why should they lament like that? And actually Krishna, when Uddhav approached Vrindavan and the gopis saw Uddhav, they actually thought that it was Krishna who was coming. Because Uddhav's appearance also was like Krishna's. Uddhav looked just like Krishna. So when Uddhav was approaching, so they thought that Krishna came. So at first they became very, very joyful, very excited. But when he came close, then they could make out that it was not Krishna, it was someone else. And then Uddhav told them, gave the letter that Krishna gave him to hand over to them. And then they became very much afflicted by the separation from Krishna. And so Uddhav tried to give some advice, but actually when Uddhav saw how deeply they were in love with Krishna, then he realized that they are much more elevated than he was. And that is the time actually Uddhav recited that shloka, Ashamaho Yusham. That is, I simply desire to become a creeper or a blade of grass in Vrindavan. And he recognized the very, very elevated position of the devotees of Vrindavan. So that was Uddhav, a very great devotee of Krishna, very much in love with Krishna. And before the annihilation of Jadu dynasty, that is, before Krishna decided to send all his family members back to Vaikuntha, he instructed Uddhava to go to Vadrikashram. Because Krishna didn't want Uddhav to go back. Krishna wanted Uddhav to stay back and do some preaching. And Uddhav was advised to accept sannyas, because Uddhav was told that soon Krishna would withdraw his pastimes, and he instructed Uddhav to simply meditate on him. And then Krishna made arrangement for sending the Jadus back to Vaikuntha. Actually, Krishna's family members were all his associates from Vaikuntha. And they were also, many of them were the qualified demigods, those who became eligible to go back to Godhead. Actually, this is how Krishna takes the qualified devotees back to Godhead. Krishna comes, performs his pastimes, and the qualified devotees get a chance to participate in Krishna's pastime, and then developing due attachment to Krishna, they become eligible to go back to Godhead. Like when Brahma was approached by Bhumi in the form of a cow, Bhumi approached, the Mother Earth approached Brahma and requested him to relieve her of the burden of the demoniac kings. So Brahma approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, on the bank of the milk ocean, and he recited prayers along with the other demigods. And then Vishnu assured Brahma in the heart that he would come soon in order to relieve
the earth of her burden. At fulfilling his assurance, the Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashayoche Dushkritam Dharma Sangsthaponarthayo Shambhavami Yuge Yuge.
So Krishna assured that he would come to Paritranaya Sadhunam in order to deliver the sadhus and Vinashayoche Dushkritam in order to annihilate the demons. And then he instructed that all the demigods should, not all, he instructed that the demigods should take birth in the Jadu and Vrishni dynasty. And that was Krishna's arrangement, to take those demigods back to Godhead. Those who became qualified with devotion for him, they were born in the Jadu dynasty. Now when Krishna performs his pastimes, Krishna comes with his eternal associates from Vrindavan, Dwarka or Vaikuntha. And that's one aspect of his associate. The other aspect of his associate is that when the people become, those who become qualified to go back to him, they also participate in his pastimes and become his associate in his Bhoma Leela or his pastimes on this earth planet. And then, when Krishna withdraws his pastimes, he sends them back by different arrangements. The gopis were sent back in certain way. His associates in Vrindavan were sent back in certain way. And here, the Jadus were sent back in certain way. And the way Krishna sent the Jadus back was very, very dramatic. Actually, Krishna's pastimes are very dramatic. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his pastimes are actually like a drama. He plays a drama to attract the conditioned living entities back to Godhead. And the way he did the way he sent the Jadus back was one day, the children of the Jadu family, the boys of the Jadu family, Krishna's grandson, and Krishna's son, along with some of Krishna's sons even, they went to a place called Pindarak, and there they came across some sages headed by Vishwamitra, Durvasa, Atri, Kashyap, Angira, Narad. And these boys wanted to pull the sages' legs. So they dressed up Samba, Krishna's son, Jambavati's son, as a woman, a pregnant woman. And they very humbly touched the feet of the sages and asked them, "Can you please tell us whether this pregnant lady is going to give birth to a boy or a girl?" So the sages, they became annoyed seeing this improper behavior of these family members of Krishna. So they simply announced that, yes, she will give birth to a mess, which will be the cause of the destruction of your family. And then they uncovered the belly of Samba and saw that there was a mess. And they became very worried. And they immediately went back to Dwarka. And no, they actually went to Prabhash, because Krishna advised all the family members to go to Prabhash, leave Dwarka and go to Prabhash, a city on the bank of Saraswati. And they presented a whole incidents to Ugrasen, the king of the Jadus. And then they became very much worried. And Balaram advised that, "Let us destroy that mess."
That's the only thing they could think of doing at that time. So they started to rub the mess against a stone, and that's how they destroyed it. And the whole mess, iron mess, made of solid iron, was reduced to powder. But just the edge of it, they could not rub off. So the last part of the mess was remaining in a triangular piece of iron. And that also they threw in the ocean. And one fish devoured that iron piece. And a fisherman got that. And he sold it in the market. One hunter bought it, thinking that to be an ideal piece for an arrow, to make an arrow. And with that, and then the hunter named Jora, he made an arrow. And in the meantime, the powdered iron kept floating in the ocean water and settled on the shore. And from that, some kind of nalur. It's a long, hollow weed. They grow very long, like sugar cane. But it is hollow. It's like jute stick in a way, but it grows in water. And so one day, the members of the Jodu family, they went to a place to have some picnic. They drank rice wine. They became intoxicated and they started to hurl insulting words towards each other. And then a fight ensued. They started to fight with each other. Then they pulled out these canes and started to fight with each other with these canes. And these canes that are just actually very, very hollow and soft thing, we're fighting with that stick and they killed each other. So this is how we can see how these are all Krishna's arrangements. Simply Krishna's arrangements to enhance his pastimes. Because these Jadus, they were such powerful persons. They are Krishna's eternal associates. They are no ordinary living entities. They all came from Vaikuntha. Now they fought with each other with these nalas, these hollow, not even bamboos or canes, just some hollow weed, and they killed each other. So it's actually Krishna's divine arrangement through the Yogamaya potency. These are all just some external activities. Like as I mentioned, in a play, we see on the stage the actors sometimes fight with each other and then they act as if they are dead. In their acting, they some die. And so it's something like that. Like they didn't really fight with each other in that sense and killed each other. It was simply Krishna's divine arrangement of a play where the mortal beings, the conditioned living entities, saw that these associates of Krishna, they fought with each other like that, and then they went back to Godhead. So this is how Krishna was withdrawing his pastimes. And then Krishna went to the bank of... When Krishna received that news, then he went to the bank. Before that, Balaram actually left his body. And then Krishna went to the bank of Saraswati River, he drank the water and he just sat down in a meditation. At that time, this hunter, Jara Bat, he saw Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna was lying and he saw Krishna's lotus feet. And seeing Krishna's pink lotus feet, he thought that that was a deer. And by mistake, he thought it to be a deer and he released his arrow at the lotus feet of Krishna. And that arrow pierced Krishna's lotus feet, and thus Krishna arranged to leave this world, withdraw his pastimes from this world. When the hunter saw that Krishna, he actually hit Krishna with his arrow, then he became very much aggrieved and he was crying and begging Krishna's forgiveness. But Krishna consoled him and said that it was actually his own arrangement. He wanted to withdraw his pastimes. And then Krishna's charioteer Daruka came there, and Krishna advised Daruka was lamenting very much, he was crying. Krishna consoled Daruka and advised Daruka to go back to Dwarka and take the queens, inform, give the message of the departure of Krishna along with the Jadus. And he advised that the members of the family should go to Hastinapur, where the Pandavas were. So this is how Krishna withdrew his pastimes. Like yesterday I mentioned that Krishna's birth and activities are divine. And as a devotee, we have to understand that. Like, the way Krishna appears is completely divine. The way Krishna acts is absolutely transcendental. And the way Krishna withdraws his pastimes, departs from this world, is also absolutely transcendental. Krishna, who killed Putana when he was 3 days old, Krishna, who killed a tremendous demon, Trinavarta, when he was just about a year old. So, and after that, one after another, he killed terrible demons in his childhood. Then when he was only about 6 years old, he lifted the Giri Govardhan mountain on the little finger of his left hand and held it there for 7 days. And he performed so many wonderful, inconceivable pastimes. How that Krishna can die just being shot by an arrow of a hunter? What to talk about, and that arrow, had it have penetrated Krishna's heart or some more delicate region of his body, then probably we could have understood. But that just hit the heel of Krishna's lotus foot. And Krishna died. Who will believe that? Only the non-devotees will believe that. Actually, Krishna, when he performs his pastimes, he performs his pastimes in such a way that increases the faith of his devotees, and it makes the demons more negative about Krishna. Demons will say, see, I told you, Krishna is just an ordinary man. See how he died. He just died being shot by an arrow by a hunter. But the devotees will say that, how can Krishna die? Like Krishna, what to talk about being shot in his foot? During the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna's whole body was pierced with so many arrows. And nothing happened to Krishna. There were so many wonderful activities in the Battle of Kurukshetra. At one time there was an invincible weapon that was actually destined to kill Arjuna. And when that weapon was released, then Krishna saw that the weapon was coming. So what Krishna did, Krishna simply pushed the chariot and the chariot sank and the arrow missed Arjuna. And because the chariot actually sank underneath and it cut the flag of Krishna's, Arjuna's chariot. So this is how Krishna saved Arjuna so many times. So that Krishna died just being shot by an arrow by a hunter. So a devotee can very easily understand that Krishna's pastimes are just to increase the faith of his devotees and decrease the offenses, increase the offenses of the demons. The demons become more and more offensive seeing Krishna's pastimes. Like there are people who didn't used to believe Krishna's pastimes. When Jarasandha heard that Krishna held Giri Govardhan for 7 days on his hand, he said, how? It's just they're exaggerating. These village people of Vrindavan, they are so uneducated, they do not have any intelligence, and they're so much in love with this little child Krishna, they are prone to exaggerate everything. Really, he just held a mushroom in his hand. And nowadays also we see a lot of demons. In the West it didn't start so much as yet, but it will begin in the West also. But in India there are demons like that. They say, well, Putana is not actually a witch or a demon that Krishna killed. Putana is a kind of a disease. It is a yellow fever, a kind of a disease. They take the literal meaning of it. At that time the children, there was an epidemic and the children were dying of the disease, and that is called Putana. It's a completely atheistic concept. So the devotees, those who are attached to Krishna, they will believe everything with a simple heart. And that is the qualification of a devotee. But those who are offensive, those who are demoniac, they will find some materialistic arguments to defy the supremacy of Krishna or to deny the supremacy of Krishna. Our business is to become devotees. So let us believe everything with a simple understanding. And that's how our hearts will become soft. And when our hearts become soft, then only we become eligible to go back to Godhead. When the hearts become soft as butter, then only the butter thief Krishna will steal our hearts. It's just a matter of our hearts being stolen by Krishna. Then only we are transported to the spiritual sky. And let the time come when the transcendental thief, Krishna, will steal our hearts. We are simply waiting for that time. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Maharaj, do you have any comment? Does anybody have any question? Yeah. There are so many ways. One is chanting. When we chant the holy names of Krishna, we are actually meditating on Krishna. Then whatever we do, we must do for Krishna. Like Jat Karosi, Jadasnasi. Krishna gave the instruction, whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we give in charity, whatever austerities we perform, we must do it for Krishna. So this is how we remember Krishna. But on top of everything, we have to understand that the ultimate consideration is actually the love for Krishna. Like, as we develop that love for Krishna, then we naturally remember Him, naturally become obsessed with His thoughts. Like a mother who is in love with her child, she always thinks about the child. When she is with the child, she thinks about the child. When she is away from the child, she thinks about the child even more intensely. So the same way, when we fall in love with Krishna, then we automatically become obsessed with His thoughts. Yeah, that shows we are actually not developing Krishna consciousness. Because a devotee always has friendship for other devotees. There are three kinds of devotees: Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. The Kanishtha Adhikari recognizes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but does not recognize Krishna's devotees and others. So that is a Kanishtha. Archayam eva haraye pujam jashodhaye hate natad bhakteshu channeshu. Natad bhakteshu doesn't recognize his devotees or channeshu or others. Shabhakto prakrita smita. The symptom of a third class devotee is that he recognizes archayam eva haraye, worships Krishna, but he doesn't recognize Krishna's devotees. Then the Madhyama Adhikari is Ishware Tadadhineshu Balisheshu Visatsucha Premo Maitri Kripa Upekha Jakarti Samadhama. For Krishna, he has love. For devotees, he has friendship. For the innocent, he has compassion. And for the offenders, he has disregard. So that is the Madhyama Adhikara. And the Uttama Adhikara is Sarvabhuteshu Japashet Bhagavad Bhavamatmana. He sees Bhagavad Bhavam. He sees Krishna in everything, in everybody. That is the Uttama Adhikara. So if we cannot develop friendship for devotees, we have to understand that we are in the Kanishtha platform. So if we at least become elevated to the Madhyama Adhikara platform, we'll be friendly towards the other devotees. And everybody likes to be with his friends. So if we develop that friendship towards the devotees, then we'd love to be with them. So that is how we can become situated in a friendly atmosphere in the temple along with the other devotees. To be elevated, by being elevated to the second class platform. Often we are in the third class platform. We believe in the Supreme Personality of God. We have surrendered ourselves unto Him. We are worshipping Him. We are doing things with due respect for Him. But until and unless we develop our friendship towards other devotees, then we are not out of that third class platform.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, we shouldn't be fanatical. And of course, I do not know how true their statement is also. Like, if we are fanatical, we should not be fanatical. But the question is, are we fanatical? Like, I mean, it's natural that we want to dedicate our lives to serve Krishna, and for that we become very intensely involved in serving Krishna. We become very intense about preaching Krishna's glories and so on and so forth. But I don't know whether it's fanaticism. And if there is any, if people misunderstand that we are fanatical, then we should behave with them in such a way that they do not think us to be fanatical. And we should be friendly with everyone. When the people come, when the outsiders come to the temple, or when they go to their temple, their houses, we should be friendly and receptive. Sometimes our presentation is rather strong and they cannot understand that. That's why they think that we are fanatical. Oftentimes it is there because of their very strong attachment to their family and friends. When devotees go and tell them that ultimately you have to free yourself from this bondage, and they can't really relate to that kind of preaching. So in a way they are also at fault. They would very much appreciate if devotees, they would have very much appreciated if the devotees went and told them, well, it's fine, your family is wonderful and you always remain with your family. They like it. So that's why in the beginning it's better to tell them that you stay in your family. You don't have to leave your family. Stay with your family, but chant Hare Krishna and try to become a devotee of Krishna. And with the understanding that by chanting Hare Krishna, they'll become free from their material attachments and they'll become a devotee someday. The preaching has to be done in a very objective way. Like, we have to understand that we are trying to get these conditioned souls back for the sake of Krishna. We should not think that, well, our duty is to go and heavy everybody out. And if they don't accept our heavy preaching, then they are demons. Safest thing is to just accept the authority, right? That's the safest. You know, if we take too many advice from too many people, we may end up becoming confused. And for especially people, those who have left the movement. I mean, living outside is one thing, but leaving the movement is another thing. If they are just living outside but a part of the society, then it's all right. Because Prabhupada, one of the most important instructions is, no matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. So when somebody leaves ISKCON, I somehow can't justify that act. What is so drastic that, what was so impossible to bear in this society that they had to leave the society? And they may not have liked somebody's management. They may not have liked some devotees in power. That's one thing. But leave Prabhupada because we did not like somebody in the movement, it's not a justification. Leaving the movement means a sheer sign of Maya. I mean, that's how I analyze it. So if then, after leaving the movement, those who could not become humble for Krishna, those who could not become humble in front of the devotees of Krishna, if he comes and still maintains their arrogant attitude and tries to give advice how we should run the movement, I think they better try to give advice to themselves first. No matter how difficult the situation is, like, everybody had gone through difficulty. Right? But not that everybody left the movement. And there will be difficulties, more and more difficult. Ultimately, the progress in Krishna consciousness will become more and more difficult. As we become advanced, the progress will become more and more difficult. But does it mean that we should give up? So under no circumstances we should give up. But at the same time, we should have compassion for the people, those who left. I do not mean that we should just turn our back towards the people, those who left the movement. Like we are trying to preach and get everybody. So what to talk about those who are in the movement and those who are a part of the movement? We should naturally try to get them back. But it should be done with the proper understanding that our business is to try to get them back. But if they are still in maintaining that attitude that everything is wrong in ISKCON, then it's actually very difficult for them to come back. And if for the sake of reassuring them, if we have to listen to them sometimes, or at least pretend to listen to them, I think that pretension is all right. And if they want to give some advice, you can say, yes, yes, that's right. Well, it will not happen again. You all come back. You all come back, become engaged in devotional service, render some service to the temple, to the society. You stay at home if you want to, if you can't move into the temple. And in most cases, I think it's better that they stay at home, because often they have their families and they have some engagements outside. So that's fine. Many people actually will live outside, but they should be connected to the society. That is the ultimate consideration. So many devotees are there, those who are living outside, but they are engaged in that. So many householders are. They're living outside, but they come to the Mangala Arati, they attend the morning program, and they render service, they give donations, and they preach. So anybody can be connected to ISKCON that way. Yeah, fine. Such a person is, we can point out that those who are causing disturbance in the society, those who are damaging the preaching work, Krishna has taken care of them. They have been removed from the society. So now you come back. Now Krishna is taking care of the society. So Krishna already took care of the society. And so now why you are still staying out? Okay, now at least you have come to the morning programs. You see, they have to soften their heart. You know, like, we can't make progress in Krishna consciousness with a hard heart. So that's why all of us have to actually, like, on our part, we should be compassionate towards them, we should be accommodating, and even if necessary, we should try to make some adjustments. But on their part also, they should try to adjust themselves to these concepts. No, right, right. I mean, the way friends, I mean, we should be friendly. Right. Like, say, for instance, if I bloat, right? Now, you're my friend. What would you have done? Obviously, you wouldn't have come to me and heaved me out. You would have preached to me that, you know, I mean, look, you had so much association with Prabhupada. You have so many devotees liked you and they still like you. So why don't you come back? So this is how, I mean, we should deal with each other as friends.
But if you come to me as a friend, and then if I just, you know, keep on blasting you, saying that, you know, I mean, you all guys have destroyed Prabhupada's movement, and there is no hope, the ISKCON is finished, then what can you do? If I don't want to come back, what, how much can you do? So, in a way, we have to try to be friendly with them, and they also have to be a little receptive and just a little understanding. I would say, let's stop fault finding and backbiting. Let's all just get together and, you know, like, everybody has responsibilities. Like, and they, I would say that they, as Prabhupada's disciples, have more responsibilities than the devotees, those who are in the temple. Most of them are actually Prabhupada's grand disciples. So who has more responsibilities? Prabhupada's sons or Prabhupada's grandsons? So they, being Prabhupada's sons, I think they have more responsibilities with Prabhupada's movement. Right. That we do, often actually we do, and so many devotees actually came back and they're engaged in very valuable service. Like one example is Adi Keshava. He left being very bitter. But then he, when he came back, he came back and became very humble, and he is rendering very valuable service. He took up the instructions that Prabhupada gave him about increasing the back to Godhead circulation and his preaching. So there are so many devotees like that. Those who are, but at the same time you'll find others also, those who are just, you know, standing at a distance and not making any endeavor to come back, but they're very, very bitter. I mean, by being bitter and just hurling insults to each other, we can't really get anywhere. Let's join hands and try to serve Prabhupada. That's the only solution. When he does not associate with the devotees favorably, when he does not accept the authority of ISKCON, the structure of authority, the way Prabhupada framed it, like the GBC and the temple president and the temple devotees, these are the two main criteria. Krishna does not actually cause the demons to become more offensive himself. But the demons, by their nature is like that. They can't stand Krishna. So whenever they see Krishna, they just become furious. And when they see that others are becoming attracted to Krishna, they become even more envious. Right? Krishna never actually wants anyone to become negative about him or go away from him. Krishna wants that everybody should come back to him. But when a person has a very strong false ego, then he naturally feels averse towards Krishna. So actually demoniac tendency means a very, very inflated false ego. They feel, why people should worship Krishna? Why not me? I'm better than Krishna. So that is the demoniac nature. Yeah. Well, living, well, that was a way of putting it, because I was just trying to visualize, you know, like when I was saying it, I remembered how we left. It has been described as Balaram lay down on the bank of the ocean, and a snake came out, Anantashesh came out in the form, a snake came out of his mouth and went back to the ocean, or entered into the ocean. That's how Balaram left. Balaram, who is actually Anantashesh, or actually Balaram is the origin of Anantashesh, left like that. So that's why I said he left his body. But there's no question of his leaving his body, because his body is transcendental, Sachidananda Vigraha. And Krishna, of course, with his inconceivable potency, he can leave his body. Krishna, who is the controller of both material and spiritual nature, Krishna and Balaram, they can, apparently for our vision, they can leave a material body behind. Actually, Krishna, they did that. They actually performed the funeral rites of Krishna after Krishna left his body. They saw the body lying there. And the people in the material nature, the mundane people, they actually took that body and performed the funeral rites with Krishna's body. But we have to understand that's another aspect of Krishna's yoga maya. You know, like, you know, he just made everyone feel that there is his body made of panchabhuta, five elements. What's that? He invites and then? Yeah. Yes, some actually did go back to their post, but you also can understand that by getting a chance to participate in Krishna's pastimes, they became pure devotees of Krishna. And when they went back to their respective post, some of them, at heart, they were actually with Krishna. Like sometimes pure devotees may be here, but we at the same time they're also with Krishna. Yeah, Krishna actually, no, Krishna doesn't use his flute outside of Vrindavan. That's one of the four aspects of Krishna, four added qualities of Krishna. His flute, and attracting his devotees by playing his flute. Yes, Srila Prabhupada.
One hand, they're not spiritual.
The thing is, this is an apparent, like in the spiritual platform, there is no question of Krishna's dying. Right? But certain pastimes are there that actually, ultimately it is meant for increasing the faith or increasing the disbelief of the demons. Like for Krishna, there is no question of being shot by dying by being hit by a hunter's arrow. And this also, this Keshavatar aspect, it has actually been described, like Krishna and Balaram being the incarnation of hair of Vishnu and so on and so forth. But these are, we do not really pay much heed to that. This doesn't really bother us at all. Because we are simply concerned about Krishna of Vrindavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes, who is even the cause of the incarnation, origins of all incarnation. So that is what our understanding of Krishna. So these are all, you know, in order to pacify some mundane concept. You know, sometimes in Mahabharata certain things have been stated, but they don't really have, or rather we don't actually have anything to do with those pastimes. Like Moshal Leela, we do not really pay much heed to it. I mean, when we know that Krishna is beyond birth and death, what to talk about Krishna being beyond birth and death? We are also beyond birth and death. So what to talk about Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So where is the question of his dying, being hit by an arrow? What to talk about Krishna's associates dying, fighting with each other with some hollow weeds, not even from sticks. You know, had they have been fighting with some hollow bamboos, that could have been understood at least. And hollow weeds. So that's why Prabhupada just, you know, cut it there, right there. That we are, I mean, they are actually just some mundane presentation. Very mundane aspects of Krishna's Yogamaya arrangement. We don't have anything to do with that. Hare Krishna. When is Guru Puja? Okay, fine. Yes, you can ask. Yes, you read Krishna book. Yeah. So what did you write? What did you say there? In Krishna book. It's not like that in where? No, the way it has been mentioned in the Krishna book, that is right. Oh, yeah, they were actually displaying that Krishna is a baby, and then he displayed his Narayan form to assure his mother and father. So that has been depicted in the picture, in the painting. But Krishna, in the Krishna book, the description is that Krishna appeared as a four-armed personality with fully decorated, wearing crowns and all kinds of ornaments in his body. That's how he appeared. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he appeared as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes. Not only Nityasiddha, he was Krishna's eternal associate. That we have to understand for educating the conditioned living entities. Krishna advised Uddhava to act in a certain way. Because Krishna told Uddhava to take sannyas and meditate on him. That is the business of a sannyas. So Prabhupada actually through Uddhava, Krishna actually taught how one should accept sannyas. He should leave home and simply meditate on Krishna. Do whatever he is doing with his body, mind and words just for the sake of Krishna. And through Uddhava, Krishna actually cited that example. What's that? Pride. We can understand that there are sometimes some transcendental pride. Now, Uddhava's pride was actually transcendental. He thought that he was a great devotee of Krishna. So if you feel proud at that you are a great devotee of Krishna, it's all right. But become a great devotee. Do not vainly, do not falsely think that you are a great devotee of Krishna. Like Uddhava, he thought that he was a very great devotee because actually in Dwarka, he was the greatest devotee of Krishna. There was no one as intimate as Uddhava to Krishna. But then that's why Krishna gave him an idea that there is one place called Vrindavan where the devotees are even more elevated than him. And Uddhava immediately accepted that, oh, these people love Krishna more than I do. So I just want to become a speck of dust of their lotus feet. And not only he didn't want to become a speck of dust of their lotus feet. He wanted to become a creeper in Vrindavan, a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that when the gopis would walk by, someday, sometimes, probably they would step on him and he would get the task. He would get the touch of the dust of their lotus feet. And that is how, one way you can see, I mentioned that he became proud, but now you can see how humble he became. Right? Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, the language actually is a carrier of our feelings, right? So when our feelings change, language also changes, right? Like when you are 6 years old, the way you used to speak and the way you are feeling today is quite different, although you are the same person, right? Then when you are talking to some friends, you speak in certain way. But when you are talking to your enemies, if at all you have one, then you speak in some other way, right? So we can see the language changes according to our mood and according to our state of consciousness, right? So some literatures were written by Vasudev in a less matured stage, right? Less matured spiritual elevation. Whereas some other literatures were written in a more mature state. And on top of everything, Vasudev is not really writing himself. He has such a sharp memory. He remembered everything and he wrote how they spoke. Right? So those people, you know, when they come out with this kind of argument, they don't really mean anything. We can smash them. Any other question? Okay, all good. Okay. She was a sentimental devotee. She believed in Krishna. We don't deny that. But, and she imagined some kind of relationship with Krishna. Like sometimes some poets also write about Krishna. And they display some kind of devotion, right? And when you read them, then sometimes you even shed tears. Right? But that doesn't make those people great devotees. Like probably they will just, you'll see that somebody wrote wonderful, like I know some Indian poets wrote wonderful poems by Krishna. And also nowadays also you see that some people, they sing beautiful bhajans, right? Beautifully they sing Krishna's pastimes. But the next moment they go and smoke a cigarette. So you know that they haven't actually developed in love for Krishna in true sense. So what I quoted yesterday was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statement that I mean, how can a devotee feel that Krishna is, if he is situated in the real understanding, or if he is seeing Krishna in Vrindavan, will he see Krishna in Vrindavan alone? Is there Krishna in Vrindavan? Is Krishna ever alone in Vrindavan? And to think that only me and Krishna and nobody else, is that a right understanding? So when somebody comes up with that kind of statement, then what will you conclude? That person doesn't have the right understanding. He's just imagining some sentimental way. Mira actually displayed a lot of attachment to Krishna. But how genuine how real her attachment was, that is questionable. Was she attached to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with the real understanding of who he is, tattvata? Or he was just attached to him, you know, the way a woman out of sentiment, you know, becomes attached to somebody else. Jato Shakti Vrinda. Right. And yeah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhur Dashir Anudash Kripa Seva Obhilasho Magi Narottama Dash. Never me and Krishna or me and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm the humble servant of the servant of the Lord. Mahaprabhu himself has sent that Gopi Bhartto Padakamalayo Dasho Anudasho Dasho. So in our line, a devotee never feels like that. In reality, a devotee never feels like that. Me and my Krishna. And actually we can see that as a woman, she was envious. She was envious. That's why she never glorified Radharani. Because she thought that Radharani was her competitor. herself, yeah. But still, you know, he was glorifying Radharani. Yeah. Yes. Yes, so actually we are discussing to straighten out our understanding, right? We don't want to go out and tell people, you know, this kind of agitating. They'll become simply agitated. So better we keep quiet with them. Oh, you, when they say Mira is a great devotee, just keep quiet. There's no point in, you know, getting into an argument with them. Because first of all, what is their understanding? They'll simply become agitated and they will think that, oh, Hare Krishna devotees are so puffed up. The thing is that Kamsa, when he came as Jagai
when he came as Chand Kazi in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, then he developed the love for Krishna. But sometimes Sarupa Mukti is awarded when they have developed some service attitude. So you see, there are two kinds of liberation that is awarded to not, you know, completely attached devotees. That is Sharupa and Shajujya and Sharupa. They get the same kind of, Sarupa means the same kind of form. That is four-armed Vaikuntha form. So he was, that means he was elevated to Vaikuntha. And by being, at the time when he was dying as Kamsa, he did develop some love for Krishna by that time. Whereas as when he, in the other pastimes, previously, not exactly Kamsa, but Jay and Vijay, when he came as Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, then Kumbhakarna and Ravan, and then Shishupal and Dantavakra, did not really, before Shishupal and Dantavakra, they did not develop that love or submission to Krishna. So they, at that time they got Sajujya Mukti. They were in the Brahma Jyoti. But then when they came down as Shishupal and Dantavakra and got a chance to participate in Krishna's pastime, then they did develop some kind of, at the last moment, they realized that, well, after all, Krishna is God, so let's become submissive. But that inimical feeling was still there in the other two pastimes. Like, there is a nice story about that. Should I go on like this? Okay. You see, when Ravan was about to fight with Lord Ramchandra, he wanted to have the support of Bali. Bali also is a daitya. So Bali was a very powerful king. So Ravan wanted to get his help. Now Bali was in the Patala Loka. Right? And so Ravan went to his palace. But he saw Vishnu is guarding that. Somebody was guarding his gate. Right? And Ravan could not enter. Ravan tried to enter. But wherever he looked, he saw that that person was there. So he was trying, he thought that now I'll go from that side. So when he tried to enter from that side, avoiding that guard, he saw that the guard was standing there. So he got very surprised. So finally, after a lot of trouble, Ravan entered into Bali's palace. And by the time he was literally exhausted, he was panting. Then Bali, when he approached Bali, Bali invited, asked him, gave him a seat and said, Ravan, how are you doing? So Ravan said, what kind of guard do you have? He seems to be, you know, guarding your gates, in such a way that no one can enter. So he said, yes, I have a very special guard. Anyway, I can see that you had a lot of trouble. So now sit down and relax. So then Ravan said that, look, Bali, I want your help. I'm fighting with the son of Dasharath, Ramchandra. I have a war with him, waged a war with him. So you please help me. So Bali said, look, you see that Ram is actually Vishnu. And it is impossible to win the war with him. I have learned the lesson once and I don't want to make the same mistake. So you better give up. Have a compromise. Send his wife back to him. So don't get into a fight with him. And so Ravan kept on insisting, no, he is just a human being. You are a daitya and I am a rakshasa. We are so powerful, we should give up just to an ordinary human being. So Bali said, I'm telling you, he's not an ordinary human being. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the person you saw outside who was guarding the gate,
He is actually Vishnu himself when you saw his potency. So, and Ravan said, but still, I got in, I deceived him and I got in to the palace. He said, well, after so how much trouble you got in. And let me tell you, you got in because they allowed you to get in. If you did not, then you couldn't come in. So Ravan kept on insisting. And then Bali said, look, what do you want? You want wealth? I'll come with me. And he took him to a mountain of gold. Took him to a place and he saw a huge mountain of gold. And that on that mountain there were rows of diamonds as big as the body of Ravana. And there were not only one or two diamonds, there were rows of diamonds right up to the peak. And on the peak there is a huge diamond. So he said, Bali said, if you want, you take this. You came to my house, you just take it. So Ravan said, oh, wonderful. And so he said that you have to pick it up though. You have to carry it to your Lanka. So Ravan said, fine, I'll do it. I can carry mountains. I'm so strong. So Ravan tried to lift it, but he could not. Then he tried his best and he was sweating all over. Still he couldn't lift it. So then Bali said, look Ravan, you see, this is actually yours. You know, this is yours. And he explained, in your previous life, you came as Hiranyaksha. And this is the earring of Hiranyaksha. this is just the earring of Hiranyaksha. So you can well imagine what kind of form you had at that time. Right? And still you are killed by Vishnu. That Vishnu killed you. So still you want to fight with him. Now if you want to go back to hell, if you want to go to hell, then what can I do? If you want to die, if you want to enter into the region of Jamaraj, then what can I do? Go and fight, but I'm not going to fight. So, as Ravan, so you see, as when Ravan died as Hiranyaksha, he did not recognize Krishna or Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then when he died as Ravan, then also he did not recognize Ram as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's why he got a Shajujya Mukti. Shajujya Mukti is very much like an unconscious state. They elevated to the spiritual region, but do not have the consciousness. You know, consciousness is not manifest. But then when he died as Shishupal, then he remembered, then he saw, yes, this is Vishnu. So that's what elevated him to the Vaikuntha planet. And in Vaikuntha he had the Sharupa, like the same kind of form, that is, he had the four-armed form. Yes, yes. Krishna's pastimes are all Yogamaya's arrangement. No ordinary living entities can participate in Krishna's pastimes. They have to be very, very special people. Like as I said, it's a kind of a drama. Right? Like when a king plays a drama, then no ordinary people get a chance to participate. It's only some associates of king. Some selected people get a chance to get onto the stage with the king. Right? So same way when Krishna performs his pastimes, even demons are actually devotees of Vaikuntha. Now, this is one understanding. Another understanding is by
these kind of pastimes, Krishna gives them a chance, gives his devotee a chance to be elevated to a higher platform. See, Jai and Vijay were from Vaikuntha. They were not even from Vaikuntha, they were the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. So they were actually outside of Vaikuntha. Right? But they did desire to serve Krishna. And because of the service attitude, Krishna made some arrangement, they fell down. Right? They became demons. And then, ultimately they got a chance to take part in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes as Jagai and Madhai. And by participating in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, they were elevated to Navadvip, which is Vrindavan. So they were outside of Vaikuntha, from that region, from the gate of Vaikuntha, they transcended Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Dwarka, Mathura, and came to Vrindavan. Right? What a promotion. So Krishna actually promoted them because of their service attitude. They played the part of a demon so well that Krishna promoted them.